Today on Focal Point from Mike Fabares.
We need to recall the witness at your wedding, which wasn't your best man or the maid of honor. It was God. He is the one who stands up and says, not only am I standing as witness, which is a sobering thought, but I am the one making two people one. And therefore, I'm very interested in whether or not you keep the vow till death do us part or whether you don't.
Starstruck lovers utter the words, till death do us part. But do they really understand that's a covenant promise? People who lived during biblical times were used to the concept of a covenant. But today we're not so familiar with it, especially as it applies to marriage. Well, today on Focal Point, Pastor Mike explores how this covenant differs from other promises and explains its timeless importance to God. So many marriages are in trouble today. You won't want to miss this message, Rethinking Marriage as a Sacred Covenant.
When I was in college, my pastor told me the story of his first conversation with the lady who would later become his wife. What you need to know about my pastor is he grew up in a very formal background, very formal upbringing. He was always taught as a kid that you needed to address a young lady by her last name. But he had his eye on this gal at church, and he was really enamored with her. He so badly wanted to meet her. So when he finally mustered his courage, he went up to her and decided to forego all the formalities. And he just said, "Do you mind if I call you by your first name?" And she smiled, and to his surprise, she said, "Why, I wouldn't mind if you called me by your last name." And so their whirlwind romance ensued, and marriage followed hard upon, as Shakespeare would say, and wasn't too long after that they were married. And I thought about that, the phenomenon of romantic attraction and how that all goes down. Even in the Bible, in this wise man who writes the 30th chapter of Proverbs says, man, it's just beyond understanding how that whole romantic thing works. You just can't figure it out. As a matter of fact, if you go to the dictionary and look up the word romantic, and I'm not making this up, you'll find these words defining it: fanciful, impractical, unrealistic. I'm not kidding. This is what it says. And I'm thinking to myself, well, I guess that's true. That's kind of how this works. There's these weird feelings and emotions, and we fall in love, which means our hearts are just enamored with all these romantic feelings. And eventually, what's amazing is it seems to always lead, almost inevitably, to the front door of this thing called marriage. Now, you don't even need a lesson on the concept of marriage to sense that that's all about, like, contracts and legalities and, you know, this thing that we do that just seems very, very sobering. I mean, it's a sobering concept. I mean, if you think about it, as one author writes about the concept of marriage, this is an incredible commitment that we are standing in front of people making. I mean, it's such a big deal. I mean, it's one thing to tell your girlfriend you'll pick her up at 8. It's another to tell her you'll love her 20 years from now. I mean, think about that. As he put it, he said this. He says, the marriage vows are simple ones, but they're remarkable for the extremity of their loftiness. And that's certainly the truth. We're about to enter into this covenant relationship that's supposed to last forever. And I'm promising, pledging to you, I'm going to love you forever. That's a big deal. And it's interesting how that happens, and yet all of us, a lot of us here, if we've got this band on our finger, we sitting here today, married people, we've made that commitment. I mean, it's akin to saying, I need a ride to church next week. Will you take me to church? Give me a ride to church next week. Oh, and by the way, and the next week, and I need a ride to church for the next 30 years. And can you pledge to me that you're going to do that? I mean, no one in their right mind would do that. I mean, you're going to drive me to church until one of us dies. That will be your promise. You sign right here, and we'll dress up in tuxes or whatever, and just you make it final, you're going to do that for me. You wouldn't do it. You certainly wouldn't do it. And then whoever dies first has to pay for the other's funeral. This is an amazing contract that we're making for one another to say we're in it for the long haul. It's a big, big deal. What we need to know about this is that this is a an interesting arrangement that, though it seems somewhat amazing that so many people participate in it, it really is something transcendent. It is something divine. The Bible presents it as something more than just some kind of domestic contract that people have come up with. It is presented to us in Scripture as a sacred covenant. And I already used that word in the beginning of our discussion, but you need to know what a lofty word that is, covenant. I mean, it's presented as this thing called covenant. We're familiar with the word. It's that the name of that box that Harrison Ford fought the Nazis for. Remember that? It was called, it sat in the middle of the temple. It's called the Ark of the Covenant. We got a Bible in our hand. You got 39 books on the left, 27 books on the right. We call them the books of the Old and the New Testament, which is another word for covenant. All over the Bible, we have the Abrahamic covenant, the Davidic covenant, the Palestinian covenant. We got the New Covenant. We got the Mosaic covenant. Covenants are everywhere, ubiquitous, all throughout Scripture. We know they're in the Bible. But what's interesting is when it comes to this human relationship called marriage, the Bible says, wait a minute, here's another one. It's a divine covenant. Now that for most people just right over their head because it's never even discussed. I've rarely heard a sermon, a message, or read a book that really presents marriage in the context of this is a sacred, divine, transcendent covenant. And yet in the next 3 weeks, what we'd hope to do is do something from Scripture that will help us understand and better our marriages, or if you're single here, do a little group premarital counseling, because if you ever run into this thing called marriage, you'll want to know something about it from God's perspective. And I thought before we go anywhere, we have to examine marriage through the matrix and through the view, if you will, of what it means as a contract, as a covenant, as a sacred divine covenant, because that's how it's presented in Scripture. Turn to Malachi chapter 2, and if that sounds hard to find, it's not. Go to the book of Matthew and turn left one book, and there it is. The last book of the Old Testament, Malachi chapter 2. This post-exilic book, they'd already been taken to the dog pound in Babylon. They were already brought back. They'd rebuilt the city of Jerusalem, Nehemiah, Ezra. They'd all done their work. And there they are in post-exilic Israel, getting their act together, and they fall into the patterns, a lot of familiar, convenient, comfortable patterns, and they start to see things happening in their Jewish society that the prophet Malachi steps up and says, now, wait a minute, stop. You got some problems. You got problems with covenants. And he begins to discuss in chapter 2 a series of covenants. And I want to walk through three of them just by way of example to get us to the third. The first two by way of example to get us to the third. Because the third one is the one that if you have one of these on your finger, you're involved in. It's the marriage covenant. But we need to look at covenants. And as a matter of fact, before we get to the first two covenants in Malachi 2, let me throw out covenants. By the way, that's the first point in your outline. Let's jot that down. We need to become familiar with covenants, number one. And to do that, getting familiar with covenants, I want to talk about covenants that we do see in the Bible that have nothing to do with the covenants in Malachi 2. Jot this down if you're taking notes. The first subcategory here is human covenants. Marriage and the other two covenants discussed in Malachi 2 are not human covenants. Human covenants, and here's a good definition, are covenants where, here's how I put it, people author the contracts and people draw up the terms. That's a human covenant. People author the contract, they come up with it, decide what it's going to be, and people, they come up with the terms, they write out the terms. Here's what's going to happen if you break it, and here's it's an agreement that is made between human beings, and it's drawn up by human beings. As a matter of fact, we have lots of examples of those, and I know they hardly even qualify to the lofty stature of the word covenant, but they are covenants. They're just not divine covenants. As a matter of fact, if you want a couple of examples, here's Exodus chapter 2, verse number 9, I think it is, when little baby Moses is in the basket. Remember that? And Miriam's going along the side of the river there to see where the basket's going to end up, and the Pharaoh's daughter comes out. Well, they make a deal. They enter into a covenant, and they basically say this, you find someone to nurse this baby, and I'll pay you money for it. It's a quid pro quo. I give you money. The baby gets nursed. We'll enter into a contract. I do it with my kids all the time. Take out the trash every week. I'll give you a dollar every Friday. That's a covenant. And that's, by the way, what covenants are all about. They are devices and tools to help me get people to do what I want them to do. And the terms are, in the case of taking the trash out, you do it, you get a dollar. You don't do it, you get your fanny whipped. How about that? That'll be the covenant we make, okay? Don't report me. I don't spank them very hard. But the deal is, you do this, and there will be benefits if you do it, there will be penalties if you don't, and it's a human contract. It's the trash covenant. I came up with it, I wrote it out, I drew up the terms, the kids agreed to it, now we've entered into the trash covenant, okay? The inverse of that, and there are covenants in the Bible, human covenants is kind of a sub-point of the first section here, is a covenant where I'm trying to get someone to not do what I don't want them to do. A good example is Rahab and the spies. Remember that in Joshua 2:14? They make a deal with Rahab and they say, listen, we don't want you to tell the people in Jericho that we've been here, so here's the deal. We will spare you and your family. You put the red cord there. Remember that whole story? We'll make it. We want to try and get you to not do what we don't want you to do. And I can make a covenant with you. I don't like you a whole lot. I don't want you moving into my neighborhood. I'll give you $1,000 if you don't buy a house on my block. How about that? That's a covenant too. I don't know if you want to agree to it. You might want the $1,000 to stay out of my neighborhood. You might want to live in my neighborhood. I don't know. It's not a covenant I've ever made with anybody. Whatever. Bad example. But the idea is there are covenants that try to prevent you. I try to prevent you from doing what I don't want you to do by trying to somehow come up with terms. They're human covenant. Okay, we're not concerned with that. But they're good examples of the next category. And the next category are sacred covenants. Or if you want to put it this way, divine covenants. These are covenants that are distinguishable from human covenants, and you can guess this, because God authors the contract and God draws up the terms. There's a good definition. Now, I know, by the way, if you're a big Bible scholar or seminary grad, there's a million ways to analyze and systematize covenants. I understand that. But just for our survey, we can say there are human covenants where people make up the contract and determine the terms, and then there are divine covenants. And divine covenants are where God draws up the contract and he determines the terms. Okay? You're tracking with that. The Bible, by and large, is interested in those, the divine or sacred covenants. We try to summarize all of the Old Testament covenants by saying, well, that's the Old Covenant, the Old Testament. And the New Testament covenants or promises, we say that's the New Covenant, the New Testament. That's what God is interested in, is explaining to mankind the contracts that he has drawn up and the terms that he's delineated, and he wants to tell us as human beings, you can enter into covenant with me. Which, by the way, gives us two kinds of sacred covenants. There's a vertical covenant. A vertical divine covenant. And that's where we finally get to our passage, because you were waiting to get to Malachi 2, right? So let's look at Malachi chapter 2. And I said verse 7, but we should start in verse 1, because it gives us the whole big overview of this. Just skip through a few of these verses. Verse number 1. This is the first kind of second category covenant, divine covenant, and it's a vertical covenant. And by that I mean it's between God and a person, or God and a group of people. Malachi 1. And it says this, verse 1, and now this admonition is for you, O priests, if, and this is God speaking through the prophet, if you do not listen, and if you do not set your hearts to honor my name, says Yahweh Almighty, I will send a curse upon you, and I will curse your blessings. Now, by the way, that was no news for them. Drop down to verse number 4, because he recalls the covenant that he had made with this group of people within Israel, the Levites. And you will know that I have sent you this admonition so that, here's the phrase, my covenant with Levi may continue. 12 tribes in Israel, one tribe Levi. Levi was the tribe that you were born in. As if you were going to serve as a priest, you would be chosen from the Levitical tribe. And in that tribe, God makes a deal with that 1/12 of the nation and says, I'm going to make a covenant with you guys, God to human, a vertical divine sacred covenant. And they were to be the quote-unquote pastors, if you will, of the Old Testament, the priests, the leaders. Okay? My covenant, verse 5, with him, that is Levi and that part of the nation, that tribe, was a covenant of life and peace. Here are some of the terms. I gave them to him, and this called for reverence, and he revered me and stood in awe of my name. You reverence me, and here's what you'll get. You'll get peace and life. Not, by the way, just for the tribe of Levi, but for the whole nation. If you would do this, you'll get life and peace, but you got to revere me. You have to stand in awe of my name. You have to truly instruct people, verse 6. True instruction was found in his mouth. I mean, he carried out this covenant. Nothing false was found on his lips. He walked with me in peace and uprightness and turned many from sin. That's when the covenant was working. God made a deal, trying to get Levi and Israel to do what God wanted them to do. He entered into covenant with Levi, and he said, in this vertical sacred covenant, he said, if you do this, see, here's what you'll get. You'll get life, you'll get peace, things will go well. If you don't do it, you're going to run into trouble. As a matter of fact, verse 7, here's what happened. It didn't go well because you didn't do it. The priest ought to, verse 7, preserve knowledge, and from his mouth men should seek instruction because he is the messenger of Yahweh Almighty. At least that was the contract, the covenant. But here's the problem, verse 8, you've turned from the way and your teaching has caused many to stumble. You violated the covenant with Levi, says Yahweh Almighty. So, there's penalties, there's stipulations. I've caused you to be despised and humiliated before all the people. Now, there's history there that we don't know about looking at that very verse, but apparently the tribe of Levi and the priestly tribe was suffering immensely. And God said, this is all happening to you because you're not keeping your end of the bargain. The trash isn't getting put out. And so you're going to have a problem. You're going to get spanked because those were the terms of the agreement. And you broke it, so I'm going to enforce it because you've not followed my ways and you've shown partialities in matters of the law. Sacred covenant, second category, first type, between God and people, vertical. Okay? There's another kind of this second category sacred covenant, which turns the covenant on its side. That is still a sacred covenant because God still draws up the contract and still determines the terms, see? But now, look at the next verse, we have another one. This is the second of three covenants described in this text. Look at verse 10. He says, have we not all one Father, speaking now to Israel? Did not one God create us? Why do we profane the covenant, here's another one, of our fathers, more on that in a second, by breaking faith with, not vertically, but with one another? Now we'll get an explanation of what this was about, verse 11 and 12. Judah has broken faith. A detestable thing has been committed in Israel and in Jerusalem. Judah has desecrated the sanctuary that Yahweh loves by marrying the daughters of a foreign god. See that? As for the man who does this, here's some of the repercussions of breaking this covenant. Whoever he may be, may Yahweh cut him off from the tents of Jacob, even though he brings offerings to Yahweh Almighty. He may come and still want to be a part of the team, but here's the thing, you're not on the Israeli team anymore if you marry the daughters of the foreign gods. If you go and marry these people of another country who worship a foreign god, sorry, you lose. You don't get to be a part of the nation anymore. This was the covenant he made with them that had to do with who you marry. And that was a vertical covenant. The choice now was about how I'm going to relate to the daughters of the Yahweh worshipers or how I relate to the daughters of the foreign countries with the foreign god worshipers. My decision horizontally, God saw as a sacred covenant, not because it was directly played out vertically, it was played out horizontally. That's a different kind of covenant. It's the same category. It's a sacred covenant. God draws up the contract and God determines the terms. But it's a covenant that's played out in my choices horizontally. That sets the stage for the next covenant described in the next verse, verse number 13 through 15, verses 13 through 15, that all of us can relate to. Because unless you're an Old Testament Israeli living under the Levitical priesthood, I mean, the first one you say, well, I don't even quite connect with that. And this other thing about being an Israeli and getting kicked out of the camp if you marry, you know, an Edomite gal who worships a foreign god, I don't really fully connect with that, though there are New Testament parallels there too. We can all in our modern day relate to this because this was not a covenant with Israel. This was not a covenant with Levi. This was a covenant with all mankind that started in the garden. And he says it this way, starting with the consequences for breaking the covenant. He runs backwards through this, verse 13. Another thing you do, verse 13, you flood Yahweh's altar with tears. You're crying, you're weeping, you're wailing because he no longer pays attention to your offerings. He doesn't accept them with pleasure from your hands. And you say, why? Why would God reject me? Right? You're really upset because God's just shut out. He shut you out, man. No intimacy with God. It is because Yahweh is acting as the witness between you and the wife of your youth. Because you have broken faith with her, you've broken the covenant. Though she is your partner, the wife of your marriage covenant, here's a third covenant now. Has not Yahweh made them one, his flesh and spirit? They are his. And why one? Because he was seeking a godly offspring. So guard yourself in spirit and do not break faith with the wife of your youth. Three covenants talked about. One here is a Levitical covenant. We don't understand that. Okay, we're not living there. Okay, there's another covenant here, the covenant about marrying the daughters of a foreign god, which still has applicable New Testament implications, but not a covenant we signed up for as Americans, okay? This third one is a universal covenant he makes with all mankind. It's a covenant about the longevity of the marriage relationship. And he says this, you need to keep it. He says, guard yourself, look at the punchline in verse 15, in your spirit and do not break faith with the wife of your youth. The logic is because God stands as, look at the middle of verse number 14, he is acting as the, you see that phrase? What's the word? Witness. The witness between you and the wife of your youth. Jot this down, number two, and then we'll unpack it. Number two on your outline, we need to jot this down. We need to recall. If you're wearing one of these gold bands on your hand, recall the witness at your wedding, which wasn't your brother or, you know, the best man or the maid of honor. It was God. Because when you entered into marriage, you entered into God's territory, because marriage was a contract that was not written up by the Orange County, you know, office of whatever, records. This was not something determined in the courts. This is something, according to the Bible, that was designed by God. He wrote it up. He describes how it works. He determined the terms. He wrote the contract. And you enter into it, just like the Israelis did about marrying the daughters of worshipers of Yahweh instead of worshipers of a foreign god. We have entered into a contract that says we now enter into this covenant that God is witness to, and we live it out for the rest of our lives. And that's not foreign to you, because most of you said something like that at the altar, right? With this ring, I thee wed, rich or poor, sickness and health, better or worse, something like that you said, right? And then they ask you, do you take this person to be your life, you know, your lawfully wedded wife for the rest of your life? And you said, you didn't say, I'll try, right? You didn't say, I hope to, you know, mother-in-law would have jumped up. You said, I do. You made a contract before God as the witness, and all of a sudden now, ooh, this is, becomes a bigger deal. It is not a two-dimensional contract, though it's a horizontal contract. It's a three-dimensional contract in that God is witness and officiant. He is the one officiating the ceremony. Look at the next verse. In verse 15, not only in verse 14 does he act as the witness, verse 15 says, he made them one. Now, I know the grammar here in the Hebrew text is very confusing, but I think the NIV is onto it. This seems to be a reasonable reading of this very confused sentence. But the point is, it seems to say God is the one making these two one. He is the officiant. He is the one who stands up and says, not only am I standing as witness, which is a sobering thought, but I am the one making two people one. And therefore, I'm very interested in whether or not you keep the vow till death do us part, or whether you don't. Now, some people are going to be totally just frustrated and blown out. Well, I'm divorced and I... More on that later, okay? Because I'm not talking right now to divorce people. I'm talking about people that are contemplating it. I'm talking to people that haven't done it yet.
A biblical challenge to keep marriage vows sacred. You're listening to Focal Point and a message from a series from Pastor Mike Fabares called Those Words at the Altar. To get a downloadable audio file or to purchase CDs for the complete series, visit focalpointradio.org. Well, a message like this one's hard to hear if you've been through a divorce or have a loved one who has. Pastor Mike's going to offer some additional thoughts on that soon, but today's truth is for those who haven't taken the plunge yet. The crumbling of marriages often happens as a result of disillusionment and being ill-prepared for the challenges of life. And that's why every day on Focal Point, Pastor Mike dispels the myths and fabrications about God, His Word, and covenants like marriage, replacing them with truth. And you'll hear more when you ask for the new resource we're offering right now. Now, I'm just thrilled to talk about this brand new selection for October. It's Pastor Mike's hot-off-the-press book called Raising Men, Not Boys, Shepherding Your Sons to Be Men of God. Well, I've got three grown sons myself, and I wish I'd had this when they were growing up. It's not like the one-size-fits-all cookie-cutter methodologies you'll find rampant in Christian parenting today. Instead, Pastor Mike guides you through keeping a mindset of discipling them into biblical manhood. We'll send you this book today when you give a generous gift to Focal Point. And hey, if you're one of the first 50 to respond, you'll get a signed copy from Pastor Mike himself. Call 888-320-5885 or give online at focalpointradio.org. Maybe you've been listening in silence on the sidelines. Well, the fact that you're here identifies you as a truth seeker. Step out to connect today and we'll send you a free CD selected by Pastor Mike. It's a freshly minted sermon he recently preached as part of his Christian parenting series called The Urgency of Biblical Goals. Even though it's geared for families, you'll hear timeless truths you wish your parents had guided you toward. Complete what's been missing in your family life. Ask for the CD, The Urgency of Biblical Goals. It's free just for calling 888-320-5885 or online go to focalpointradio.org. I'm Dave Drewy. Glad you landed here today. Tomorrow, Pastor Mike Fabares continues with a word for those in struggling marriages. So be sure to return Thursday for Focal Point. Today's program was produced and sponsored by Focal Point Ministries.